Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 303, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Talking mainly Knicks, obviously in the first hour. We'll get to the baseball. 106-103, the Pistons over the Knicks in Game 5. Sets up a Game 6 tomorrow night where, listen, you do not want to head back for Game 7. And a couple different things real quick before we get to the calls on baseball, on the draft again if you'd like. Everything's on the table here at 888-808-1019. It always is at 3 o'clock in the morning. But a couple things. One, this we talk about the effort. And that the likelihood of this being, or I think it is certainty, right, that Walt Clyde Frazier, this was the last playoff, this is the last home game in Madison Square Garden that Walt Clyde Frazier will ever call. And obviously, playoff game, that he will ever call. And Dick Barnett, you know, obviously, rest in peace to the great New York Knick, Dick Barnett. Obviously, I've never seen him play. Heard about him plenty. But the night they, you know, they talk about him and make note of him and honor him and, you know, no more Clyde in these playoff games with the new formats coming out. Like, it's just, that's the effort. Like, we talk about Sam Rosen and how it went for the Rangers this year. Obviously, John Sterling had to call that fifth inning. I know it was in the World Series. It's not quite the same, but still. I mean, that's the kind of effort on the last time Walt will ever call a playoff game? That sucks. And then the other question is, these are conversations I'm having off air, and then I was having, that was with Leagues, and then I was talking with Marco about what would happen if the Knicks lose this series. I don't want to get ahead because they still have, all they have to do is win one of two games. And I still am pretty confident that they're going to. But we talk about Tibbs, right? We were just having that conversation about what happens if they lose the series. What happens with Tibbs, even if they win the series and get blown out by Boston? Like, where are we with the coach? As much as we think this team is now locked in, right? It's the core. The owner goes on podcast and talked about this is the team moving forward. We're going to have a couple-year window to try and win a championship with this team. If they lose to the Pistons and they can't get out of the first round and they blow a 3-1 lead, and that would mean including losing two games, a game five and a game seven, at Madison Square Garden. I wonder if there's changes to the team. Like, forget just the coach. Does Leon Rose have an issue with this group off a season that, yeah, they win 51 games? Absolutely. And yes, they had the best first half of, you know, the last 30 years. And, you know, they're uber talented and they were, when they're playing at their top level, they can be as talented an offensive team as there's been in the NBA this year and all of that. But if they can't get through the Pistons, And there, I know he's tweaked his ankle in pretty much damn near every game, but he's playing. He's healthy. This is the team. This is the core group. Like, could you see major moves? Now, they're not going to do anything with Brunson. I don't know if they could move OG's contract. But, like, could Josh Hart be expendable? Could they do something with Mikal Bridges? Like, could you see this group be blown up off of a loss like this, off of a devastating loss like this? I mean, we might not just be talking about Tibbs. We might be talking about this team. It's not crazy. That's how disappointing this series loss would be. And I know they just brought in Brunson for all the draft picks. Again, with how good we expect the Knicks to be, they're not killer draft picks. It sucks because they have value. And if you wanted to use that value on someone, it'd be better than someone who would flame out and be moved in 1 year. That's not ideally how you want to use that value of all those first-round picks. But if you feel the core of the team needs to change, if you think there's an issue with the mix and they can't get past the Pistons with a 3-1 lead, I wonder if you could see a major shakeup, not just on the bench, but with the core of the team. I mean, that is a legitimate question I would have. And I'm not even saying it's a guarantee that they would have to. I'm not there yet. Let's see it play out and see what happens in this series before I would even start to debate whether I think that should happen or not. But it's going to be if they lose this series, that's a question. And I wonder how Leon Rose, who's desperate for a championship, who's been willing to make moves. You know, there are other superstars out there. Obviously, with how you saw the end of this game in Milwaukee blowing the lead they had to the Pacers and all the issues with Giannis and how unhappy he looks, and Kevin Durant is going to be available in the offseason. There's going to be some players who always shake free and some superstars who might be able to be moved. And I don't even know if that's possible for the Knicks, but there's going to be conversations about changing the entire core of this team other than Brunson. Everyone else would be up for debate if they lose this series. That's how devastating and how important these next two games are. They have got to win this series. Forget just whether or not it gives them a chance to win against Boston, or, you know, I felt that winning last night would at least make a statement and make me feel better about this team and give them the time needed to rest up and take on Boston. But forget all that for a second, because I know that's ultimately how we'll judge this group, because I think most Knicks fans still expect them to win one of these next two games. But if they don't, we might not be just talking about just the coach. We might be talking about the foundation of this team, this group in particular, and whether or not Leon Rose can get creative and shaking it up. And as much as I love him, moving Hart, I know he's not a superstar, it shakes up the core of this team. It's something they'd have to consider if they do not win one of these next two games. 888-808-1019. Then you get to the baseball of last night. The Mets with a decisive victory over the Arizona Diamondbacks. The offense is starting to wake up, other than Juan Soto, of course. But we saw an inning with arguably the three best defensive plays back-to-back-to-back that we have seen in a long time. I mean, a play off of Vientos' glove made by Lindor. The incredible catch in center. Just an incredible layout catch from Taylor that was... I mean, I was watching the Knicks mainly. I have this. I'm pretty much watching with no sound. And I scared my son when I screamed as he was going through my phone on the fantasy baseball team, making the most absurd trades. Maybe I should read the trade offers that my son has been sending out. My 7-year-old son, the trade offers he's sending out straight up. You would like this one. We needed a starting pitcher just to try and get some points. I picked up Sears. He had a good start. And so off of that good start, my son has offered Sears for Jacob DeGrom. We'll see what the guy says. He offered, I forget his first name off the top of my head, but Lau, the first baseman from the Nationals. He pretty much included him in every trade for every single superstar in Major League Baseball. So while he was doing that, I suddenly shouted when Taylor made that catch and scared him, and he dropped my phone. An incredible catch, and then a hard-hit ball that Lindor snags on a one-hopper was an incredible defensive. And here's the other thing defensively, and I mentioned this the other day about his skills around the bag and his scooping skills. Not only is Pete Alonso having the best offensive year of his career, he is playing a gold glove caliber first base. It's not just, oh, you know what? He's better than we think, which is the conversation that always happens with Pete Alonso when we talk defensively. He's better than you think. Like, he's not going to hurt you there. He might even be slightly above average. He is playing an excellent first base. I mean, every game I'm watching him dive and make a play in the hole. Every game. Now, he did have a terrible throw to the pitcher covering first that helped blow that game the other day against the Nats. That has been an issue for him. But other than that, and that's really the only time I remember it this year. It's been an issue in the past for him. I don't remember it other than that one play this year. But he is playing an excellent first base. And the Mets have really been a pretty damn solid defensive team. You can't run on either catcher, but, you know, they've done a really nice job with base running. Defensively, even Beatty at second had made some significant plays where you thought that would have been the weakness for the team. Vientos has probably been better than you would have thought and has made some leaps there. I mean, the team is, and Soto, you know, again, better with his arm than with his glove. He's made a couple throws. A couple of bad plays, lost the ball in the sun the other day. I don't even know if you count that as far as defense. That's just a circumstance that sucks. But defensively, they're great. Offensively, they're coming around. They're getting everybody back. They're healthier. They have more options. The lineup's deeper.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
And the starting pitching again. Now, you know, Peterson did have that inning where he got tattooed in three consecutive. That's how you know your starting pitching is going well. He got three balls absolutely smoked. For a 1-2-3 inning. I mean, that's as good as it gets. And they continue to throw out great starting pitching performance after great starting pitching performance. Unbelievable. As Peterson, again, gives them an opportunity to win the game. They score a bunch of runs. They play well defensively. Clean, crisp baseball from the New York Mets. And then we get to the Yankees talking about starting pitching. Carlos Rodon, I know the three home runs to start the game. They have an offensive explosion against the absolutely disastrous Baltimore Orioles. Like, we were just talking about it. Not to spend too much time on the Baltimore Orioles, but what a joke organization. Can we just take a second? This was a team that had all of these young, top prospects, and everybody and their mother, all the Yankee fan haters, all of the self-loathing Yankee fans who hate Brian Cashman and hate the organization pointed to the young upstart Baltimore Orioles, and they're going to be the class of the division for years to come. And the Yankees are in severe trouble because the Baltimore Orioles are now, with new ownership, are going to be well-run. They're going to spend money. Their farm system is tremendous. They have all these great, talented young players, and the Yankees are screwed. And watch this slop that the Baltimore Orioles throw out. Oh, my goodness. I know they won the first game, but look at how they've played this year. The offense is back in the tank. Their pitching is atrocious. They make the trade for Burns and then let him go in this new ownership that's going to throw money around, that moved the walls back to try to get starting pitching here. They've abandoned that because they have, you know, a bunch of right-handed hitters who were telling them they can't hit home runs in the building. And they have fallen apart offensively. Gunnar Henderson has really not been good since July of last year, even though he finished fourth in the MVP. He's come back down to earth. He had a home run in this game, but he's been struggling. And their pitching is atrocious. As Kyle Gibson, making his first start of the year, got absolutely annihilated by this Yankee offense. The Torpedoes were back as they hit three home runs to start the game again. And of course, leave it to me. I'm going to start criticizing more players. I get on Volpe. He's now had five straight games with an extra base hit. Yesterday, I call out Bellinger. He has his best game as a Yankee, arguably. And I'm still listen, the offense, it was an offensive explosion. I'm not going to tell you it's all solved or whatever, but like, the Baltimore Orioles are a joke. The Toronto Blue Jays are a joke. And you want to tell me, oh, the Yankees can't win? Look at the American League. Seattle's in first place in the West. Oh, the Texas Rangers are going to be back this year. Okay, it's a month and we'll see. And they're talented and they've pitched well. But they're having the same issues offensively they had last year. They're in second or third place behind Seattle. Everyone tells me the Central doesn't count. So really, I feel pretty confident about where the Yankees are right now at 18-12 with an opportunity to go 19-12. But the story for this game for me is the six perfect innings from Carlos Rodon. And I've been critical of him as much as anybody else has. And I still will tell you, in a big game, in the back of my mind, there will always be a fear of him blowing it or not being able to overcome any sort of controversy, or once the ball starts rolling in the wrong direction, he can't deal with it and he'll have his blow-up inning, which he typically does. But And I know how much money he makes, but let's be fair. In the last 20 starts since July 14th of last year, Carlos Rodon has a 3.16 ERA, and he struck out 11 per 9. Like, Carlos Rodon has been, and get ready because I'm going to use the word, a great starting pitcher for the New York Yankees. Flat out. He's been really, really good. Over the course of the season, they need him to step up in the regular season. I understand that we're still concerned about him as your game two starter in a series, in a playoff series, as am I. But if you look at what he's done over the last 2 years as just a guy in the rotation that you need to count on every fifth day, for the most part, Carlos Rodon has been really, really good. Really good. And this year, he is throwing the ball great. And he has been a huge positive for this team. Without Luis Gil, and we're waiting for him, and without Gerrit Cole all year, Carlos Rodon was going to be important. And outside of like two innings since opening day, Carlos Rodon has been there for the New York Yankees. He was excellent again today. He has been terrific. And we can knock him. In fact, no, you can't knock him. Actually, you can't. You can't knock him. You can question him. You can have concerns. And you can wonder if he'll be there in the biggest of moments. That is still fair. But for every fifth day over the course of a regular season, which you have to make the playoffs, and with the rotation they have now, with Carlos Carrasco, has actually been pretty good, but I'm you're not worried about every single time to Carlos Carrasco hits the mound. Will Warren, who's been good start, terrible start, good start, terrible start. Like, with that being the guys in the rotation waiting for, you know, the great pitchers to come back, or, you know, waiting for the great Marcus Stroman to rejoin the rotation. Like, he has been a pivotal part of this team. And you have to be fair, Yankee fans. You have to be fair. Carlos Rodon hasn't just been good. He's been great. He has been absolutely a number two to Max Fried, who's been brilliant. And that is what saves the starting rotation. Right now, you can count on the top two guys. You can. To say you can't count on Rodon is unfair on what he's given you this year. It's unfair to say that. He's been great. Now, in the big game, I will always worry until he proves it. But over the course of the regular season, in a Yankee uniform the last 2 years, now the year one, I'll give you, injured half the year, miserable the other half. Can't argue it, just an atrocious first season. But these last two seasons, in the regular season, every fifth day, Carlos Rodon has earned his paycheck. Carlos Rodon has been a very good starting pitcher for this Yankee team. And he continues now three straight starts of dominance. Not just solid, not just, hey, he figured out a way not to blow the game. Dominance. And really, other than a mistake here, the two big mistakes that he made, the three-run home run against Pittsburgh and the game against San Francisco where he gave up the two home runs to Kim, and specifically that second one that broke their back when they had a lead. Other than those two innings, he hasn't just been good, he's been dominant. And it's time to at least start to give him a break. We can always question him because he hasn't proven it in the biggest of moments. And that's what it's about, and I get that. But with the state of the Yankee rotation, he has been a godsend. There's no other way to put it. You have to be fair. He's been great. And he was brilliant again. And now it's three consecutive dominant starts. And outside of two innings, and maybe the second game of the year, we have seen almost 90% of Carlos Rodon's pitching this year not just be good, but be dominant. Dominant. It's time to get off his back. 888-808-1019. Let's go to James in Fairfield. What's up, James?
Yo, Chris, what's up?
What's up, brother? How are you?
So I want to talk about the Mets. Before I get to that, let me talk about what you were just saying about Carlos Rodon. So if you're willing to trust, are you willing to trust Carlos Rodon in a playoff start?
Oh, am I willing? Yeah, I have no choice. Right now he's the number two starter. I have to trust him. And yes, the way he's pitching right now, I trust him in a playoff spot. Now, I mean, I don't know if he'll be brilliant, but yeah. Well, do you think they're going to get four more pitchers that I'm going to start in playoff games instead of him?
I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't know who's going to be available at the deadline. Maybe you get Castillo or someone like that. But, I mean, coming from a Mets perspective, would you trust Griffin Canning in a playoff start? Right. I mean, I feel like he has better numbers than Rodon.
I don't think he's been as dominant as Carlos Rodon, no. I don't know if his numbers are better. Rodon has had a couple of blowups and given up a couple of three-run home runs. But you watched, and that's part of it, no doubt. I'm not dismissing that. But on a Carlos Rodon, for most of the season, it has been more dominant than Griffin Canning. But Griffin Canning's been great. I'm not trying to knock him. But Carlos Rodon's had a better track record. Griffin Canning was one of the worst pitchers in baseball last year. So if you ask me right now, who do I trust in a playoff start? Griffin Canning's been good for all of a month of his career. Carlos Rodon earned a contract and has been a all-star pitcher and has been dominant to start the year. I'd prefer Carlos Rodon.
I mean, definitely true, but you got to think about also the Mets pitching lap. That's what they're doing with Canning. I mean, they did it last year with Severino.
No doubt. He's been great.
Exactly.
Is he even starting? I mean, is he starting a playoff game for the Mets?
Probably not, to be honest.
Because there you go. Because they have better options. Yeah. Manaea, Senga, are definitely starting, probably, and then obviously Clay Holmes, and you really only need four, and I would guess right now you're looking at Peterson? Like, I don't know who would be the fourth starter on this team. I don't even know if it'd be Griffin Canning.
I mean, no, you're right. It probably is Peterson. So then saying Canning is probably the same pitcher as Carlos Rodon. Carlos Rodon's a Yankee second pitcher right now.
Yeah. Oh, so no. If you're trying to make a conversation about who's got the better rotation, there's no doubt the Mets are pitching far superior to everyone else in baseball, let alone the Yankees. But if you're trying to knock Carlos Rodon, I'm sorry, I'm not listening to you right now. He's been dominant. His last three starts have been better than Griffin Canning have been. He's gone deeper into games. He's given them more length. I mean, Griffin Canning's been great, don't get me wrong, and I'm very impressed with what the Mets lab's been able to turn him into, 100%. I'm not trying to knock him, but I'll take Carlos Rodon right now over Griffin Canning.
All right. I mean, agree to disagree, C-Mac. Okay. Well, I guess we'll look back in October.
I guess we will look back in October, but we fully admit that he's not going to be, both of you and I agree, that he's not going to be pitching in October. So I'm not really sure how we're going to evaluate it, but sure.
I guess you're right. Maybe the end of September. Instead.
Maybe you should just try a better way to try and knock a Yankee fan than Carlos Rodon, who's been pitching excellent over the last month and a half, really, to start the entire year. There's other things to get on us for.
You're right. You're right, C-Mac.
There you go. Come up with a better argument. But what do you got for the Mets?
I mean, I just think we're the best team in the league. But
now you have the best record. It's hard to argue with you.
I know. All right. But my biggest gripe with the Mets right now is I don't know why we sent down Brett Beattie. What are we doing with Azokar playing left field every other day?
I mean, that's the thing. He can play the outfield. He gives them more flexibility. And I'm not sure that Azokar have options? No. So you'd be losing him. You could send down Beattie. I mean, that's the main reason. It's roster. It's roster construction. You don't want to lose him, and he can play the outfield. So he's more valuable. And plus, Acuna's been good enough where you didn't need to play Beattie. I don't disagree. I would have liked to keep Beattie up there. I do think he deserved it. I think he was playing well enough for the last 2 weeks prior to being sent down where he earned staying on the roster as a prospect for the Mets and the way he was playing. But Acuna stepped up and was better. And Azucar is more flexible. Eric and Ronkonkoma, what's up, Eric?
Yeah, hey, C-Mac, good morning.
Good morning.
That was a stretch even for me being a Met fan. I mean, Canning's been good, let's be honest, but I mean, that's...
He's been good for all of a month of his entire career. Like, let's be totally honest.
That's right.
Good.
No, I was just going to say, trying to look at it realistically, I mean, I need to see much more, if he does this for, like, the full first half of the season, then I'll really be like, he may do it for the whole season, but I can't go based on, 1 month. I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised, but, I need to be more before I can start comparing him to other pitchers.
He's just trying to tweak me as a Yankee fan to say that I'm waxing poetic about Carlos Rodon and Griffin Canning, the Mets, fifth or sixth best starter, is pitching just as well. I mean, that's what he's trying to argue.
Right, but I mean,
and I can't argue with how great the Mets rotation is astounding. I'm completely flabbergasted at how well they have pitched.
If I can touch on that though for 1 second before I get to the yesterday's game. Now, like the other day, the one thing I had that I texted around when the game that Holmes pitched, he was cruising through the game, throughout that game, and yet they took him out with like 70 pitches though.
Yeah.
I think through after 5 innings. I would have left him in certainly at least for one more batter, if not two, because I mean we're already seeing that the bullpen's starting to get a little stretched out. Overworked, however you want to look at it, but they have had a couple of games where the bullpen, has had some problems. I mean, there's only so far you can go by keeping these guys only in for 5-6 innings, before you run into a problem. I mean, we see this every season. I mean, they should have, again, in my opinion, they should have kept them in. To start the next inning.
It was the rain delay was an issue for them as well. That was part of it. He threw through the rain delay, and so they felt like 70 was a good number for him. Listen, I appreciate what you're saying, and right now with the Minter injury, where it looks like he's going to be gone for the rest of the year and having season-ending surgery. This bullpen is now in flux a little bit, right? We saw Buteau pitch in this game. He's better, but Buteau has kind of struggled. I talked about this last night. Buteau has kind of struggled. Now Minter is gone for, I believe, the rest of the season. I don't know if they've confirmed that, but I think he's going to be gone for the rest of the season. Either way, he's going to be gone for a long time. The injury is significant. And Diaz has a hip issue that is making him less reliable. He's not as available as he normally would be. So you're dealing with a closer who might not be able to pitch as much and or as often as he normally does. Now your top left-handed guy, I know they signed Brooks Raley, and we'll see when he's going to be ready off of Tommy John, but Minter is gone. Buteau has not been as good as he was last year, and Kranich is starting to come back to earth a little bit, or Stanek, you know, blew two saves. So, like, the bullpen's in a little bit of flux. Still been overly very good. I mean, I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying that right now they're dealing with some stuff. And the starting pitching, as great as it's been, is going to have to start giving them more innings. So they chose not to make it right there with Clay Holmes, especially with the rain delay. And Griffin Canning has been a five-inning guy. Clay Holmes has kind of been a five-inning guy. You haven't seen a lot of depth from this rotation, but you've seen excellence. They're going to have to start going deeper into games. There is no doubt about it. They're going to have to start going deeper into games to help this bullpen and not have it be so overly used, especially as the names that you rely on are dwindling. But you want to quibble about when they took out? Like, they have been... I don't know how any Met fan... I mean, you want to talk about trying to find an issue, and I'm not trying to get on you, Eric. You're a good fan. I'm just saying, like, that's how good the Mets are going. That you just called me, and your biggest complaint in a game they won, that they didn't keep in the starting pitcher long enough. Like, that's it. That's what you got. It has been that and Juan Soto. And I heard Sal, and I understand Sal's point. I do. I know, I don't think that he can't get excited for how good this Met team is. I do understand that Juan Soto not performing is a little bit of a downer. Not that it should overshadow anything. I don't think that's what Sal was saying necessarily. Like, it's not that it overshadows anything. It's that part of the excitement for the season, part of the reason so many tickets have been sold, it wasn't that, you know, when you were saying, when the whole big brother, little brother thing was happening, it wasn't so much, hey, we're going to have a great year and you're not. That's part of it, but it was Juan Soto is now with the Mets. And he was great from the jump as a Yankee, and every Met fan was excited to see the great Juan Soto be a part of what's going on with the team. And so far, he's not. And I have to admit, I'm not huge on reading body language, although I do think it was fair to read it with Devin Williams. So I know sometimes I buy into it, sometimes I don't. Hey, that's life. Sometimes I think people read too much into body language, but sometimes I do think you can. I think Devin Williams' situation where his last outing, his body language led me to take him to believe that they were right to take him out of the closer role as much as his lack of success. Like, I honestly believe, I saw something put out about his changeup was still the best pitch in baseball this year. It still had the most movement or most rotation spins. Like, his changeup was still, in the metrics, the best pitch in all of baseball this year, and he was getting tattooed. So, like, it wasn't so much just his stuff. I do think the body language was part of it. I have to admit, watching Juan Soto and the clip, and I'm reading too much into it, but I watched every one of Juan Soto's at-bats last year. And it does feel a little bit different right now. And it's probably, and I shouldn't even say probably, it's almost certainly all about his struggles. And he never struggled like this with the Yankees last year. And even if he did, it was already after he had such a great start that his numbers were always good and he contributed so much to the team early on. So when he did go through his mild struggles throughout the year, it didn't look like 230. He didn't see 230 on the scoreboard for his batting average at any point last year. He didn't see 1-2 home runs. He didn't see 12 RBIs. Like, he got off to such a great start that even during his struggles, he had already started a great season. But I have to admit, we are seeing less of the shuffle. We are seeing less of the excitement. And then there's this clip right now. And again, I'm not trying to tell you that it's certainty, but when you, like, if you watch it and you're being somewhat fair, there's a moment where they have the video where Alonso kind of pulls him in to look at the camera and smile and take a picture, and he does. And then, like, the second, like, he gives it a good 10 seconds, and then immediately the smile goes away and he walks off. Again, does that mean he's unhappy being a Met? No. Does it mean he's regretting his decision? No. Does it mean that something's up with him right now and he's not himself? Yes. I think that's fair. He doesn't seem to be himself right now. He, not at the plate, not with his body language, not with his fun-loving, you know, he's still celebrating wins, of course. That's all nonsense that he's unhappy when they win. He was ripping the shirt off Marte. He was all involved in the walk-off wins. Like, he's fine, and he will be fine. But there is, you're not seeing what the Yankee fans saw all of last year. That's just a fact. I've watched the Met games. I watched every second of his entire Yankee season last year. You are not seeing the same Juan Soto that the Yankee fans saw. And part of your excitement into this year was to see that. You wanted to see that. I get that. And despite having the best record in baseball, and despite being unbelievably, you know, having this great season and the pitching lab and Pete Alonso and everything that goes with it, it certainly shouldn't make you feel any less excited about how good this team could be. On the contrary, you probably should feel like, hey, Juan Soto hasn't even done anything yet, and we're the best team in baseball. Like, it's a positive to be this good without Juan Soto contributing at Juan Soto levels. It's probably a positive. In fact, I think it is a positive. But it doesn't change the fact that you were hoping to witness, because part of Juan Soto's greatness isn't just the numbers. And I talked about this as a Yankee fan who lost them. I wasn't only disappointed that I lost Juan Soto, the player. I mean, I was, and that's the main thing. But I was also disappointed I watched, or I'm losing watching Juan Soto play baseball. Because I'll tell you, I love Aaron Judge, and I love watching him play baseball. I love watching him hit, and we're seeing a guy who isn't even locked in. I'll be telling you, I don't even think Judge is locked in, because when he's locked in, the balls are flying out of the ballpark at a higher rate than they are right now. But he's hitting. He's not even locked in. He's hitting 400. He's got a 1.2 OPS, and I don't think we've seen the best of him. I love watching Aaron Judge play. It's still not the same as watching Juan Soto at bats. There's something about watching Juan Soto go through an at bat and that chess match that is the pitcher-hitter situation, and the shuffle, and everything about it. Like, watching Juan Soto play baseball is an absolute joy. I loved every second of it, and I was quoted as saying, and I mean this, in parts of me, somewhere deep down, if he was going to leave, I'm almost excited, or at least, you know, I shouldn't say excited, that's not the right word, I shouldn't say excited. I'm almost okay with the idea that he went to the Mets, because at least I'm going to get to watch him on a nightly basis. That's how much I enjoy watching Juan Soto. That at least somewhere deep down, the baseball fan in me is somewhere deep overriding the Yankee fan in me, saying at least I get to watch this dude play, because that's how much fun it is to watch Juan Soto play. And for the first month, despite all of the winning, it hasn't been that much fun watching Juan Soto play. And I understand the downer that is on some level. But that's your biggest complaint. Your biggest complaint is the Mets are doing things with the starting rotation that this side of maybe the Astros a couple years ago, or the Astros 6-7 years ago, we haven't seen before. I mean, it doesn't matter who they plug in. They're incredible. They've done a masterful job of it. They're the best team in baseball. They have the best record in baseball. At home, they are damn near unbeatable. And this doesn't put a damper on that. And as a Met fan, you should be through the roof excited. But I could understand someone who was looking forward to watching Juan Soto be Juan Soto and not having seen it yet is a little bit of a downer. But I fully expect you to see it. And eventually he's going to be Juan Soto. But something's off right now. Something is definitely off. And if you go back to his days in San Diego, there were times where something was off in San Diego. It just so happens, and this has the Yankee fan has lost them. I have no ground to stand on to brag about this or throw this in your face, Met fans. So please, do not take it this way. You have him. I long for him. I miss him. I'm still pissed off he's not a Yankee. I'm not trying to brag, but I'm just stating facts. We as Yankee fans, saw nothing but the best of Juan Soto in every moment of his 1 year as a Yankee. San Diego saw a downturn, and the Mets are seeing a down first month. The Yankees never saw that. We saw nothing but an unbelievable hitter and a guy who could carry your team, a guy who was there when Judge wasn't there. Just every day of him being in a Yankee uniform, he was at the pinnacle of the sport. And we have not seen that in a Met uniform for a month, and that's what you thought you were getting from day one, and it hasn't been there. And that's why he's going to continue to be a story, but ultimately, I have zero doubt, zero, that before long you are going to see that, and the idea that you're this good without it is far better than having Juan Soto and having other people struggle and not being that good. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the way you would want it. And it's actually a really positive scenario for the team if you think about it, because there is no doubt Juan Soto's going to get going. But we haven't seen it yet. And you haven't seen the same kind of joy from him. That's just true. And it's much more to do with his struggles than it is being in a Met uniform. But it is the case.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Here we go. First pitch time, 8:31. And Jeter swings. It's a high drive to left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Derek Jeter hits a first ball fastball deep in the bleachers in left field. And on the first pitch of the game, the Yankees take a 1-0 lead.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. We're talking a little bit of baseball. We'll continue to do so as we take it till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Same with the Knicks and their disappointing effort to close out a series against the Pistons as they fell 106-103 and now have to head back to Detroit for a game six tomorrow night. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Christopher in Jackson Heights. What's up, Christopher?
Hey, Chris, not much. First off, I always want to say is I always respect that you give both shares on both the Mets and Yankees. You know, you're not always one-sided. You give equal takes, so I appreciate
that. Thank you. I appreciate that as well. So many of your peers disagree with you, but that's okay.
They're incorrect.
I agree with you, Chris. Go ahead.
Actually, you made solid points in the last 5 minutes regarding Juan Soto. You know, it's always love that we have him, you know, here with the Mets and stuff like that. And yet, there's a certain body language, even that take that you had mentioned when he was on camera, and I think it was Nimmo with the grand slam.
Yeah.
He came in. The body language just looked a little off. But yeah, a player could be just disgruntled with his performance. Yeah. So it's all good. You know, he's with
us. I think he's desperate. Listen, they're winning. He's not contributing. He just got paid this big contract. He's struggling. Like, I think it's just, you know, I think he's probably frustrated and disappointed with himself, and he's just, you know, not being himself. I don't think it's that.
Just going through the funk.
Just going through a funk. I really don't believe that he doesn't like his teammates or he's unhappy or he regrets leaving the Yankees. Any of that. I don't buy that at all.
Now, as far as with defense, me personally, I value defense over offense anytime. In particular with Pete Alonso. Mm-hmm. I remember in his spring training in his rookie season, what was said about his defense was that it was subpar.
Mm-hmm.
And through that season, I was like, nah, he's actually above average first baseman. And he has improved through the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I value his defense. Like, I trust him. You know, in the old days, if your first baseman wasn't good, you swap him off for a better defender, even if he's not good offensively. But Pete, I always want him there. And the same thing goes for Acuna. I'm glad that Mendoza is sticking with Acuna and just putting McNeil in center field.
Yeah.
How that's going to relate him in center field? I don't know. But I want Acuna for most games at second base. All about the defense. You have the second and first baseman. And, of course, you have Lindor at shortstop. Solid. Mm-hmm. You know, even last night, I felt spoiled with that one specific inning. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, of course.
I was just like, I'm like, okay, that's one. Okay, that's two. Oh, we got three? We're being spoiled right now. It's just even listening to it on TV, you hear the crowd just going crazy. And I'm loving it. I'm digging it.
Yeah.
But yeah, as a Met fan, you're always like, okay, what's going to happen next? What injury or what's going to happen? But you always have to be optimistic. So as always,
well, it's easy to be optimistic right now, Chris. I mean, and yeah, that was one hell of a defensive inning. That was incredible. And it helps your starting pitching when you play that kind of defense. And yes, Pete, I've always felt, I thought Pete was solid around the bag and good with scoops. The numbers say he's fantastic, and this year he has been, no doubt. And then, you know, I thought he was okay with his range, and his throwing to the pitcher has been an issue for him. His arm hasn't been great. This year he has been, I can't deny, he has been an incredible defensive first baseman. I watch a fair amount of baseball, with the postseason going, with the NBA playoffs, I've watched a little bit less of the late night games, and with this job, I've watched a little bit less because sometimes I need a nap before I get in the car. But like, I watch a lot of baseball. Pete Alonso's playing. I can't imagine playing much better at first base than Pete Alonso's played. He's got to be in the Gold Glove conversation this year. Like, there's no doubt. He has to be. From the scoops he's made to the range he's showing, he has got to be involved. That's how good he's been. He is a Gold Glove finalist first baseman as far as I'm concerned right now. And that is a far cry from where he started, where I thought, he's okay defensively. And again, I don't want to get into the Alonso coming back conversation, but, you know, David Stearns did talk to Joel Sherman and John Heyman on their podcast and was asked questions about this. And, you know, I think it's going to be very interesting whether or not Pete's back. I really do think this is the last year of Pete Alonso in a Met uniform. I'd be surprised if they give him another contract. And I guess I was quoted when I mentioned this before as, you know, too pricey. Obviously, I know he's got the money. It's not like he can't afford Pete Alonso. But I just don't know if they'll deem him worth the contract he's going to get on the free agent market. I think they're going to feel this is the best of Pete. They've gotten it. They've got long-term contracts on the books, you know, or with Lindor and obviously Juan Soto. And I could just imagine wanting to go and attack free agency and get younger. But that's not a conversation for right now necessarily. I think Pete's having an amazing year. Steve in Long Island. What's up, Steve?
Hey, C-Mac.
What's up, brother?
Always great to speak to you. I agree with the previous caller. With the Mets and the Yankees, you're equally fair. I don't see
Thank
any
you.
Difference. I'm calling about the Knicks. I think it's a bit worse than you're presenting, even if they get by Detroit, which I also agree they probably will. It shouldn't have been this kind of struggle. And it's clear to me, very clear to me, that this team athletically is not there. I mean, they have, you know, they're ball players. You know, it's different between a ball player and an athlete. And these guys are ball players. They're not great athletes. And they're going to struggle against most NBA teams because the NBA today, these guys are not only great ball players, they're great athletes.
I don't know. I mean, they did win 51 games. It's not like that is against the rest of the NBA, and it didn't seem to be too much of a struggle against it. The best of the best they did, certainly. They didn't win a game against Cleveland or Boston or OKC. But I do think, like, as much as I was frustrated with last night, and I am, and I'm frustrated with their intensity and their performance last night, when you say it shouldn't be this much of a struggle, I got to be honest with you. You don't think the Pistons have played really well and really smothering defense? Like, I've been watching a lot of the NBA playoffs. I haven't seen another team play the smothering level of defense that the Pistons have played. Like, they are all over you from the jump. It's been a very physical series, and it was allowed to be up until game five, up until last night. They are all over. Like, they do not let Brunson up the floor without being all over him, hand-checking. Like, they have played a brand of physical and tough defense that, I mean, I just got to be fair. I'm not saying they shouldn't have won last night and made it an easier series, but, like, these games are tough because I think the Pistons are playing really great defensively.
I think it's because they're just a much athletically superior team. I think that some of their players are just incredible athletes, and the Knicks don't have that level of athleticism. I think if the Knicks were playing against...
Yeah, but do you expect... Here's my question. Do you think Boston is going to play the same level of smothering defense?
No, I don't. Right. I think Boston's just a better team.
Right, I think they're more talented. It's not. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's that they can't beat Boston because the Boston athleticism is going to run them out of the gym. I just think they're more talented. They have more better players.